D72 is the professional PC text multi-tool designed for automation in diagnostic, Windows repair, and malware removal. No other tool can help you automate more, relax more, and get paid with less effort than ever. Podnuts likes to thank Nick Shaw for his continued support.
Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 385, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Halish. I'm joined today by Matt Rainey from Podnuts Pro. Welcome to the show again, Matt.
Hey, thank you, Jeff. It's good to be here again.
It's good to have you on the show. And I hear you got some funny stories to share with us and also a product that you put together that you're making available to technicians, which I think is really cool.
Yeah. Well, funny, some sad stories, but yeah.
We like them all. So go ahead and what's first there that you got for us?
Well, these first little stories are related to Blacklist. So we do a lot of work with Small Business Server. Most of our clients are on Small Business Server, so of course that includes Exchange Server. So from time to time we have to deal with Blacklist. Now Blacklists are scary to some techs. Some people just freak out when they get on the Blacklist. They don't know what to do. But from a customer standpoint, they just don't understand it. They think of Blacklist as this mysterious thing, and how did I get on it? So the first call I got, and they never exactly – the customer doesn't know what's going on. Like the call I got said, I can't send mail to this person.
So they don't know why they got on the Blacklist.
No, according to them, they don't even know the Blacklist. They like the symptom says, I can't send mail to this person.
Gotcha. Okay.
Okay, so my next question is, can you send mail to other people? And of course, the response is, I think so. Well, let's test it. Go ahead and send me an email. You know, so they only know I can't send mail to this one person.
Okay.
So I asked a few questions, and I'm checking things while they're telling me this because I'm just getting them to do some little homework while I'm looking up mxtoolbox.com. You can do a Blacklist test on there.
Okay.
So, I mean, our customers, I can tell their IP address in a matter of seconds, and I can look that up while they're talking. So they say, well, yeah, I can't send you an email. Okay, did you get a bounce back message? Yes. What does it say? Well, I don't know. Okay, that's fine. I mean, is it in English? Because we can read it if it's in English.
I love your matter of fact all the time.
So
that's awesome.
They'll read it and say, oh, yeah, bounce rejected due to whatever. I'm like, okay, well. And by this time, I've looked up, yes, you're on a Blacklist. Okay, so I say, you're on a Blacklist. Oh my God, what does that mean? Well, I mean, someone at your company is sending out spam. More than likely, of course, not intentionally. Or it could be an infection. Could be somebody hacked an account password and they're sending out mail. I said, this should affect everybody, not just you sending to this one person. So this is a company-wide problem. You're on quite a few Blacklists. So I tell them what's going to happen, and I can tell them what's going to happen, and they just don't even listen.
Right.
So I give them the basic steps. I'm going to be looking at logs. I'm going to be seeing why you're on a Blacklist, first of all, and then how to stop the spam from going out and then remove you from the Blacklist. And, of course, I tell them, you know, this process can take a day or so, depending on what I find. And this particular customer is funny because they said, well, what about Mary? Can she send mail? No. Pretty much no one's going to send mail because the blacklists you're on are the most common ones. So most everybody is going to be checking these blacklists before they accept mail. So no, she's not going to be able to send mail either. Okay, what about this person? No. Not that person either. Again, it affects everyone in the company. Okay, what about this person? I said, okay, I'll tell you what. Let's play a game. You name somebody at the company, and then I'll say blocked. Ready? Go. I mean, because he thinks, well, this person's high up. They can surely send mail. No, it doesn't matter. I said, it doesn't matter who you are.
Right.
If you're sending mail from the company, you're going to be blocked. Okay? Doesn't matter who you name. I'll just say blocked.
Right.
So you get that through their head, and I tell them, you need to let everyone know because – they're going to think emails are going out. Some places will just drop the message. Some will bounce back. I said, so let everyone know that they really don't want to send any critical emails, make a phone call, alternate methods of communication if it's critical, because the mail will not go out. or it'll go out, but it probably won't be delivered. Right. So you need to communicate that to your other people who work there. So I start looking at it, and inevitably, I start getting calls from everyone else in the company. I'm getting bounce back mess. Yes, I know. Did you talk to so-and-so? No. Okay, he was supposed to let you know that this was on a blacklist and I'm working on it. Okay. 5 minutes later, I can't send mail. Okay. Tell a receptionist, anyone who calls from that company, tell them I know and we're working on it. Because this was supposed to be communicated to them. Of course, companies have no communication.
Right.
Even if the person's sitting next to them, they won't tell them. Even when I just told them, tell everyone for me.
Now, how big is this company?
This is a small company. This is like 7 people. I mean,
so they're within distance of each other. They could probably
they could just shout, probably. Okay. And everyone in the office would hear them.
Right.
Yeah. No, and I did tell them you can send an email out to everyone because you'll get internal mail because that's not going out of your network. So you can send mail all you want inside the office.
Okay.
Because that doesn't go through a blacklist. It stays in your office.
Right.
So you can send an email to everybody. Just when you're sending mail outside the company, that's what's probably not going to work. You can receive mail all day long, but the sending is the problem because no one's accepting mail from you. I mean, in this case, I mean, blacklist, I'll cover this. I won't cover how to get off a blacklist, but generally, blacklists are going to be 3 things. Somebody's got an infection, sending out spam
right
on your network. Somebody is relaying through your server. They hacked in. That's going to be a hacked password too. Somebody gets your password and they're sending mail outside using your mail server as the outgoing mail server.
Ooh.
Or Exchange is actually sending the message out. Somebody's actually using your, which is also kind of an infection. You can have an infection where the mail engine is running outside of Exchange server on your computer. So the SMTP engine is on another computer. Or they can be using the Exchange server to send out mail. So you're logged in as you. It tries to send mail out through your mail client, which, of course, if you have an Exchange server, is Outlook, and it shows up in Exchange queues.
Okay.
It's real easy to check the 3. I mean, if you look in Exchange, I'll cover it real briefly. You look in Exchange, if you see, you can look at the queues.
Okay.
If the queues are piled up with, in this case, there were probably 100,000 messages trying to go out.
Right.
It's pretty easy to see, okay, somebody – at this point, you know it's not a rogue SMTP engine. It's going out through Exchange.
Okay.
Now you got to find out if it's a hacked password off-site or if it's somebody infected in-house. And in the queues, it's easy to see who's sending it. It's got the username of who's sending it.
Okay.
I mean, it says Bob's trying to send 100,000 messages. Okay, Bob, I know Bob's not trying to do that unless maybe he is. But then it's a matter of looking to see where it's coming from. At that point, you can say, yes, it's coming from outside or no, it's not coming from inside. Let's look at this computer. If you don't see anything in Exchange queues, it's more than likely going to be a rogue SMTP engine on the network somewhere.
Okay.
Which should never happen. Because you should always have port 25 blocked except for your Exchange server. So if you're doing any work with Exchange server, you need to set your firewall to block port 25 from everybody except the Exchange server. So that should never happen.
You know, speaking of, not to interrupt, but I came up with this. We have a certain ISP in this area that just changed over. You can have them call it manually and have them change over to IMAP from POP3. Because most of your ISPs are all POP3 still. But when you go to a Windows 8 machine, the Windows 8 mail, you cannot use POP3 anymore. It doesn't support it. So Windows 8, you got to use IMAP. So you got to call the company up, hey, make sure this account's on IMAP and all this. Well, they're giving me all the things that I need to put in, and I was surprised. I go, wait a minute. You mean the outgoing port is port 25? Yep, that's what we use. I'm like, nobody's used that for like the last 5 years, 6 years.
I said, IMAP or POP, yeah.
That's crazy. I said, that's where a lot of the spam goes out from. That's what they get. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So I don't really like ISP email in and of itself because it's just not as nice as Gmail or whatever. But anyways,
sorry. Yeah, and see, actually, yeah, that's a good point because most of my clients, I'll actually block port 25 and everything else, 587, or the other outgoing port. Because I don't want, if you have an Exchange server, you should not be sending mail out through anywhere other than Exchange server.
Right, okay.
So we block all that. So the only times we see a blacklist with a rogue SMTP engine is if someone didn't configure the firewall correctly. They forgot that rule to block it.
Okay.
We've taken over companies where, by default, most routers are going to have allow everything out. Right? I mean, that's how most routers are.
Right.
Allow everything out.
Right.
So I've seen some places, a lot of techs will go in and make a rule that says allow port 25 out from my Exchange server.
Okay.
But that does nothing. Because you already have a rule that says allow everything out.
Okay.
So if you allow this one port out from this one IP, that's already covered in the allow everything out rule. What you have to do in addition to that rule is then make another rule that says deny port 25 out from any IP address.
Gotcha.
Because if you don't deny it, you're still allowing it with the outgoing all rule with most routers have. So I see that a lot too. They said, but I'm only letting mail out from my server. No, I look at the rules. No, you're letting mail out from everything. You have two rules that let mail out, but none to block it from anywhere else.
Gotcha.
So you have to go in and make the other rule to deny port 25 and maybe 587 and other outbound ports to everyone. So that's a quick tip on that. Anyway, in that story, I found the person. He did have an infection, remove that, get them removed. But here's the end of that, very end, is that once you're clean, you've got to request removal from these blacklists.
From the blacklist, yeah. I know it's a big pain.
Well, see, and what makes it a pain is if you go to mxtoolbox.com,
okay,
and you go to blacklist, you put the IP in of the public IP of the server, it tells you you're on these blacklists. And it's easily removable from those blacklists. But what I found is people like AT&T, Gmail, Google,
yeah,
those aren't on there.
Oh, okay.
So they'll be clear on those email blacklists, but they'll call a few days later saying, I can't send mail to anyone with AT&T.net or BellSouth.net.
Okay.
So the only way to know that is to get the blacklist bounce back. Then you got to go to their specific site to request removal.
Oh, so how?
There are certain steps to do that. Usually in the bounce back, it'll tell you what page to go to. You go to that page and you jump through their hoops, and they'll remove you eventually.
But you're only going to know that if you get a bounce back email. So it could be from several different companies could still have that, and you're going to have that bounce back email. And only when that happens, then you deal with it. Then, or is there any way?
Unless you go manually check. I mean, you can bookmark the site for AT&T,
right?
And you can bookmark the site for Google blacklist and go check them manually, but. You know, and I can tell you they're a real pain to get removed.
Okay.
You can request AT&T removal. You can file a little form. You can fill it out. And I've found no pattern. They'll either ignore it or they'll remove you after a few days. They say we're going to send you an email confirming it. I've never gotten an email to confirm it. Never. And Google's even worse. Google took like a week to get off of that one.
Ugh.
AT&T, if you can get them to process it, and there's no way to call, you have to go online and fill the form out.
Okay. Wow.
And then you wait a day or two. And if you're still on it, I fill it out again. Wait a day or two. And of course, from the customer's point of view, it's not getting done.
Sure. Yeah.
So, I mean, I usually tell the customers, you're off of all blacklists that I was able to check. You might find one or two straight ones. We'll deal with those as they come up. And then when they come up with AT&T, I tell them, okay, let me tell you the process with AT&T. I'm going to request removal. They ignore it most of the time. I said, so I'm going to follow their instructions, which is to fill the form out, wait 2 days. If it's still not working, I'll fill it out again. And then I'll wait 2 days. I said, but there's nothing else I can do. And same thing with Google. I tell them, I make them expect the worst.
Right. Sure.
I've said, look, I've had this happen. It took a week or two to get off. I said, all we can do is fill out an online form. There's no one to call. There's nothing I can do but fill the form out. So at least they have an expectation of what's happening. And of course, you got to keep them informed. If you don't tell them what's going on, they're going to assume the worst. He's not doing it.
Sure.
He forgot about me, whatever. So keep them informed. Make their expectations really, really low.
Now, is there a reason that those companies are not on that easy to remove blacklist? What'd you call it? MX Toolbox?
MX Toolbox, yeah. Because they want to be difficult, probably.
two humongous companies, and they want to be difficult.
Yeah, they're not on that list. Ugh. So you can go manually search them. If you get a few client that you know we're on a bunch of blacklist, I guess you can go manually check them just if you want to be preemptive. But it's rare they get on those because they're not really active. They don't play with Spam House or CBL. So even if you're on Spam House, you may not be on AT&T's blacklist. So
now what's Spam House?
That's one of the main blacklist people. They have a bunch of blacklists that they monitor or that they manage.
Okay.
And that's one of the main ones. If you're on Spam House, CBL, you're going to be on a lot of them.
Now, is there...
So you might be on 10 blacklists.
Okay.
But you're on those 10 because you're on Spam House.
Oh, so okay.
You may not request removal from all 10. You may need to request removal from one, and then it'll filter down.
Okay, so I might have missed this. Do you actually go on a website and remove and get them removed from there, or is there a number that you can call and actually talk to somebody?
Oh, you can't talk to anybody. No. No, they're websites. And on mxtoolbox.com, if you put the IP in, it'll tell you you're on these. Click here. Click on there. It gives you proof of why you're on it.
Meaning, okay.
We found this coming at this time. And so it might have been 2 days ago. It might have been 3 days ago. Might have been 30 minutes ago.
Okay.
And then it says, click here to request delisting. So that's one way to gauge if you've cleared it up too. Because if it was listed 30 minutes ago and you do your thing, the next day you check back and it's been 24 hours and 30 minutes, then it means it's not still occurring probably.
Okay. Gotcha.
So you don't want to request removal too early. I usually tell them it's going to be a day or two if everything goes well. So you don't want to request delisting and then get listed again. Because if you keep delisting yourself, they're going to make it to where it's harder to get delisted.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, you follow the links, and it wants to know what you found, what you did to fix it.
So, okay.
Now, if that's reviewed or not, I don't know. I guess one day I could say I didn't find anything. I didn't change anything. Just remove me anyway and see what they do.
But like you said, you don't want to be the boy, crying wolf going, hey, yeah. Pull me off of here. And the next thing you know, you haven't fixed the problem or whatever, and they keep putting you on that same list.
Yeah. Maybe what I'll do is I'll actually fix it and then just give them a bogus report of what I did. I didn't do anything.
There you go.
That way they can see if they read it. Kind of like the old high school test. I used to write essays and just write garbage, thinking the teacher never read it.
Right. Yeah, that didn't work in high school.
That worked for me sometimes.
Did it really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I tested it once or twice. I mean, I wrote a real paper, but I wrote random sentences in the middle.
There's probably, it looks like good context. B minus.
Oh, yeah. I know. I said, there's no way you can read 35 term papers in the next day or two. So I just wrote in the middle of a paragraph a random thing.
Once nice.
In a while. I did it on a dare.
And it worked.
It did work. I forgot what I got for it. We had some kind of bet. So another blacklist. This is from a tech point of view. Another tech.
Okay.
So we did work for a company. This is a government entity. And we did work for them for years. They have an exchange server. But their parent entity in the government took over their IT work.
Okay.
So we weren't doing the work for them directly. Their parent organization was.
Gotcha.
So think of it as like maybe this was like a department inside of a county and the county took over.
Okay.
Okay. So I get a call from this person saying, hey, I can't – this is the upper level – saying I can't send mail to the lower level. I'm getting – your spam filter is blocking it. So we still provide spam filtering service for the smaller entity.
Okay.
And so I look it up and I said, well, yeah, you can't send mail to them because you're on a blacklist. He said, man, I've been on that thing for months. I said, okay, well, this is their tech. This is their main tech guy for the bigger entity.
Right.
I said, well, I mean, there's nothing I can do about it. I can't allow your IP because it's a global setting. If I allow your IP, now the thousands of or hundreds of domains that I'm filtering for, if you are sending spam, it can get to them. So, I mean, I can't remove this. Once you get removed from the spam blacklist, you'll be allowed to send mail here. So he's asking me, why do I get removed? I said, well, I have no idea what kind of network you're using, but I gave him the basic steps like I gave earlier.
Sure.
I said, well, he says, man, I've been fighting this for months. I said, well, if you need us to look at it, we're available. I mean, here's our hourly rate. We can help it. And so I think it's funny that they took over from us, but yet here's a tech who has no idea how to find the source of why he's on a blacklist.
Hasn't he ever heard of like Google?
And I said, which this is affecting more than just you sending to this smaller entity. This is probably affecting everyone you send mail to.
Sure. She
said, yeah, it is. But I thought it was funny that why are you calling me saying I can't send mail to this one person? Fix that. No, right. You need to fix the larger problem. I mean, is he calling everyone? I can't send mail to you. No, right. You got to fix the problem.
Right.
Months. I was thinking, oh my God. I wonder what state their people are in now that you're having to deal with. You're having to manage their network, and you can't even remove yourself from a blacklist.
Right. Wow.
Months. If I had a client call me, and I took months to get to my blacklist, I don't think they'd be a client very long.
No, absolutely not. They could not. I mean, I don't know how a company operates without being able to email.
They can't.
You know, it's like
I get clients on a blacklist, and they tell me they're dead in the water, which is a very nice picture.
that's true. I never thought about it like that. we're just floating in the water here, and face down, bloated, flu.
And you need to email in that state? Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. I say, well, I'm going to get you done when I can. I mean, and I have to tell them the reason you're on a blacklist is because of this, or this. And so once they're off the blacklist, I find it's a good opportunity to help them not get on a blacklist again, be it implement a password policy. Maybe they need a better firewall that can block outbound ports. Because if they have just a Linksys router, you can't do the things you can with a real business router.
Right.
So, I mean, that's the best time to get them what they need.
Sure.
So it doesn't happen again.
So with a lot of these, you know, so with a business router, a real firewall, real hardware firewall, or hardware software firewall, are these things avoidable? Or can things still happen? Or even with password policies and stuff like that?
They can still happen. You can greatly minimize them.
Okay.
Like I know a big problem in Exchange 03, which people still run. There's a setting on Exchange, inside of Exchange, that basically says, allow anyone to send mail to the server if you can authenticate.
Okay.
But that setting means anyone from outside the network, not inside the network. Inside the network, you can send mail. So that setting was terrible. Most of the blocks I saw in 03 were because the people were authenticating from outside the network. Uncheck the box. Now you're not a relay. Now it's not an open relay because you have to authenticate. But if you have a weak password policy, someone can just use a dictionary attack and guess your password. Now they can send mail through your server. So in 03 a lot, I just unchecked that box.
Okay.
And it's buried in the settings in the SMTP connector. You uncheck it, apply. Now that blocks anybody from relaying through your server, even if they can't authenticate. But yeah, I mean, if you can really reduce it. But some people just don't want to have good passwords. They want to keep their password with a capital P. They think they're pretty clever. Yeah, that'll...
Or monkey.
No one's going to guess
monkey
that.
Monkey 1, 2, 3.
You know, say I like strong passwords. I don't like making passwords necessarily expire on people because that causes a lot of problems.
Yeah. You know what? I think that part of the policy, I know I work for Ford Motor Company and they are still on a 90-day password exchange policy. And the bad part about that is I don't mind changing my password. Okay. Because really what I've done is I've taken my password and I add some numbers to it.
Which just, what most people do.
Exactly. But the hard part about it is I can't do it from home. I have to do it on the intranet inside the company. That's the only place I can change, but I got to be on their machines. So you've got thousands of employees, you know, a handful of machines. You got to go grab the machine within a 90-day period and change that password. Because if you don't, you'll get locked out. You can't check your pay stubs and all that kind of stuff.
Okay. So in your case, does that work? Because let me tell you how Small Business Server works. We have some clients that have password policies. It's some of them are on 60 days. So what happens is we've implemented this mechanism where 10 days, you know, you might get a pop-up saying your password is going to expire in 10 days.
Right.
Okay. So now a lot of this company's users don't work in the office. So they never see that. They only use email.
Okay.
So if their account expires, their email won't work, right?
Right.
When it expires, it checks password must be changed in Active Directory. On a phone, they're just saying can't get mail. So we've implemented where at 10 days, you get an email. Password expiring 10 days.
Okay.
On day number 9, your password expiring 9 days. I mean, there's a trend here, right? You can see it.
Sure.
So what I love is when these customers call me, my password expired. Really? Really? 10 emails weren't enough reminder for you.
Nope.
So even better in Small Business Server, you can still log into like Outlook Web Access, even with your account expired. Because when you log in, it will say, hey, you got to change your password. Change it right now. So they have the instructions how to do that. They get emails every day for 10 or 14 days, and I still get calls saying, I'm locked out of my account. So, see, for you, I mean, you may not be able to do that, but my customers can still go to the website on their home computer and change their password.
Gotcha.
So you can't do that, huh?
No, I can't do that. And it's, you know, it's one of those things where it's basically, this is just my opinion, I think the IT support is too lazy to implement a new policy and to make it be able to, we can get our information, I can get the web access to my company and get the things I need off of there. But they don't want to implement a policy of, you know, I mean, I work in a factory. So you've got, you know, thousands of factory workers that are basically using this to check their benefits, you know, pay stubs and stuff like that. And everybody has to change it at the plant. We could check our stuff at the house, but they don't want to change it and make it so we can change our password at home. You know,
The problem with the making them change passwords, I find, is that they're going to forget their passwords or they're going to write it down.
Yeah.
So now you've got your password written down somewhere.
Yep.
And or you're going to forget it, which is going to still require a call to IT department to change the password or do something, or your password's written down for somebody else to see. So making a change, I'm not a fan of it. I'd rather just implement a strong password policy. 8 or 9 characters at least would, you know, require complexity.
Right.
You know, but making them change it. Now, what do you check? Are you checking mail remotely or do you have email on your phone for your company?
No, just like I said, just pay stubs. We don't get actual physical pay stubs anymore. So we use a portal to go in and check our pay stubs every week, and we can check our benefits page and, you know, anything that we have access to. You know, 4-day plan, all that kind of stuff, all the different services and things that Ford Motor Company has.
So the website you go to, is there a box that says save password? Can you save your password into the site?
That's a good question. I use LastPass, so I don't think so, because LastPass logs me in every time, and I actually have to log in two separate times consecutively. So I log in once.
So when you change your password, how does LastPass get the new password?
I got to go in and manually change it.
Okay. But you know how to do that. I'm sure most people don't.
Most people don't even know what LastPass is.
Right. See, the thing with when the accounts are expired, you know, accounts set to expire, that little save password should say eventually lock you out. Yes, check that. I want to be locked out eventually. Because they're going to save their password, then they're going to change it, and then they're going to launch it, and it's going to send the saved password, and you're going to get locked out. I see that all the time.
Oh, my. That's got to be a pain.
It is a pain. And I've told people, do in fact, just put this one company, when I do a new computer for them now, or when I get their computer, or when I touch their computer for any reason, I go into the registry and disable credential manager.
Now, what does that do?
That's when you click that little save password box. That's managed by credential manager.
Okay. Okay.
So in control panel, you go to credential manager. So what happens is a typical call from this company is, he said, I'm locked down my computer. Okay. Did you change password recently? Yes. Okay. Did you change it? See, in this company, they have Outlook, Outlook over HTTP.
Okay.
So they open up Outlook in the field, and they click save password. But now that saved password is in credential manager. So then they go to the website, change their password. Then they open up Outlook, or worse, Outlook was still open when they did it. And when Outlook sends the saved password, it locks them out.
Wow. Okay.
So I've told people, if you're going to click, don't click save password. I said don't. I've told them, think of it as saying cause problems and check it if you want to cause problems. Hey, it's not going to work.
Right.
So don't check it. And I've told them not to check it. And take a wild guess what they do.
They probably click it. Whatever you tell them to do, they're going to do the opposite.
Right.
So what you should have told them is every time you do the click that box.
So I had enough of it. So I found the registry key to change to say disable credential manager.
So it doesn't matter what they do, or
it won't save it. They can click save password, but it won't save.
So the box is still there, but they don't know that it's doing nothing.
It won't do anything.
Great. That's awesome.
So the problem is when I get this call, I've got a remote it at the machine, open up credential manager, delete all the saved stuff. Then they get prompted and then they can type it again. And that's when I fix it too. I disable it.
Disable and register.
Oh, but I gotta log in every time? Yes, you have to log in every time. Because here's another problem with those save password. They're going to put the password in once and save it. And in 60 days, when they go to the website to change the password,
they'll forget what it is.
It says old password, new password. They have no idea what the old password is.
Well, and I'll tell you, Matt, one of the reasons I add a number to my work password is because there was many times where I was trying to change it and be diligent and make a good password. And guess what? I forgot the password. Uh-huh. So the only thing I could think to do was let me keep I still have a good, strong password. Let me add some numbers to it at the end. And I just incrementally, take them out.
So, and see, another problem, that's what everyone does. Everyone does that. But if they can find one old password written down, password one, they can try password two, password three, password four, password five. I mean, because people know that's what everyone does. They always just add a number to it.
Exactly. I've been doing it for a long time.
Yeah. Well, that's right. Everyone has. Everyone does. But I'm not a fan of that. I'd rather just have a strong password policy. Most of my calls, especially if it's one company, involve problems with the saved password and their account expiring.
And I think it is kind of ridiculous to a certain point. I think size of company really makes a difference on, especially smaller businesses and stuff. I think you're right. I don't think that they need to have a password change policy. It should be a good, strong password and just call it that until they run into a problem and need to change it,
And it may be that some Arbanes-Oakley or, whatever that was, they may require a password
or
change.
HIPAA or anything.
But those rules are made by people who just think it's nice to have. They don't really see the problems with it. They think it's just a nice checkbox. Oh, he has to change his password.
Yeah, and no. They don't maintain it. They don't have any idea what needs to be done to no. you know, to make sure that everybody can do it properly.
Yeah.
Which they won't.
And how many times do those people forget their passwords because they have to, or did they change their passwords or do they forget their passwords? But that's all, whatever. Let's just make them change it. Yeah.
That makes sense. No, not really.
Yeah. And another, here's another thing with account lockout. I had a client who called me saying, I'm locked out. Okay. So normally the first time they call, I just unlock the account. Okay. Can you log in now? Yeah, I can log in now. Okay, great. I'm assuming they just put the password in wrong. So if they don't say, hey, I know I put my password in right, but I'm locked out, I don't really investigate much. I just unlock it.
Gotcha.
So this person called. I'm locked out. Okay, unlocked. Can you log in? Yeah. She goes back a half an hour later. I'm locked out again. Okay. So now you're being locked out. I said, I'm sure you didn't log out and log back in, did you? No, I've been working. And all of a sudden, a box popped up saying I can't access the O drive or whatever. Okay. So then I do some more investigation. And when you get an account lockout, and this is for Windows servers, event log is very helpful.
Okay.
You go look in the event log in the system, and it'll say, hey, of course, you got to search through this thing. It can be huge. But you can find it. So, of course, search by failure audits, right, for security.
Okay.
And you can kind of find it usually pretty quickly if you do that. But I found out that she's – and you can see log attempts from IP address. Or from computer name. This will tell you if somebody else from the outside is trying to log in as you or if she's trying to do it. Because if you see a public IP address with some weird computer name, it's probably somebody outside trying to hack in.
Okay.
In this case, I saw one of their notebooks. And I said, okay, what's coming from this notebook? I said, somebody has this. I said, what is your computer? She was on an iMac, actually. I said, this is coming from so-and-so's notebook. I said, we need to find that notebook, and we need to see what's going on with it. Okay, we'll call you back. They called back the next day. The guy had the notebook on his desk, and now it's gone.
I said, okay.
So we're missing the notebook in question? Yeah, we can't find it. Can we block it? I said, well, no, we can't. You can't block. You can't do that. It doesn't work that way.
Right.
I said, we need to find it. If you're missing a notebook, we need to find it. But then I looked it up and I can ping it. I said, wait, I can ping that computer. In the event log, it says coming from this IP address. And here's a computer name. I said, I can ping it. So it's on your network somewhere. And then I think, well, let me go see when the lease expires. So I go look in DHCP and I see the IP address, but it's a different computer name. So let's just call this notebook. I'm getting locked out from notebook.
Okay.
With 1.215 as an IP address. I go look at 1.215 DHCP, and it lists the iMac that she's using. I said, wait a minute. Okay. So in the end, what was happening was DNS had some old A records. There was still an A record in DNS that said that notebook was 1.215 when it wasn't. Is actually the iMac. So I flushed DNS from the server.
Okay.
Then when I pinged the IP address, it went to the right computer. Or no, it was going to the right computer, but now it showed the right computer name.
Okay.
Then in the event log, now the event log showed the right computer name with the IP address. So the event log said, here's the IP address, did a DNS lookup to find the computer name, and it had the wrong old DNS record. In the end, she saved her password in Outlook and forgot that she changed her password. So she actually was getting locked out because of Outlook saved password. Now, I told them, okay, this is just lucky, but now you have a missing notebook. So go find your notebook.
Right.
It was just coincidence that that notebook now is missing.
Right. Yeah, it is kind of weird.
This thing got a DHCP lease. I said, it was here at one point because it had 1.215. So I said, go find your notebook. You're good now. Don't save passwords.
My gosh.
Let's move on.
Yeah, exactly. So,
next. Yeah, account wrong passwords. Look, I can't tell. In an average day, a wrong password or account locked out, I might get 30 calls a day with that. With all the clients that we have.
Wow. Still, yeah. That's a lot.
I know it's a lot. I'm doing all these other work orders, and in between all of them are all these account locks out, wrong password, reset password, all day.
Hey, can we hire a guy just to take the idiot phone calls? Oh, I'm...
Hey, you.
Exactly.
Never mind. You're going to do it. Forget what I said a minute ago. We just need you to do some very important work about account management.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, call them account management engineer or something. Who knows?
Really? The password resetter. That's what I call them.
Yeah. God. I mean, look, I don't, it's not that I mind them because you know what? They're all a half hour minimum charge.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where you're going to do the work because you don't mind getting paid, obviously. But at the same time, from a company standpoint, here, listen, I'm trying to help you avoid problems and extra charges and all these different things. Do you think maybe you can make your employees like line up and figure out what they need to do without making all these little mistakes all the time? I mean.
You know, and I've thought about training because most companies don't give their new users any training whatsoever. I say, here's your computer, and go to work. They don't give them any training, any paperwork, or right. anything on the how to do basic things.
Right.
How to log in, how to change your password, how to check email. They don't tell them anything.
And you know what? And the problem is, though, you know, the new employees are going to come in, and guess what? When they come up to the point where they got to change a password or something, they're going to go to their coworker who does it wrong too, and they're going to learn from their coworker the wrong way to do it.
Yeah. And this one client, I actually created a screenshot step by step, and I made it a PDF and I emailed to all the new users. And so, but they don't read it?
No. What is this?
It's a spam.
What's a PDF? Oh, that's that thing we look at. Yeah, okay.
Those are bad, right? That's how you encrypt all your files, those PDFs. Yeah, yeah. They don't read it. And sometimes if I have time, when they call, a lot of times I just reset the password. They call, I forgot, I need to change, my password expired, reset it for me. And I may not hurry, I just do it. If I have a few minutes, I said, well, what happened when you tried to change it yourself? Well, what do you mean? Well, when you went to the website using the instructions that you were sent, did you get an error? I didn't try that. Oh, let's go ahead and try it right now. So I'll make them do it.
Sure.
So now they can do it themselves.
Now, if I don't, you're still charging for those calls, though, aren't you?
Oh yeah.
As an employer, I would be livid, to be honest with you.
Well, I've sent the instructions.
Right.
I do what I can to make sure that they can do it without calling. And either way, if I reset it, I charge them. If I connect their computer and show them how to do it, it's the same charge. But if I have time, now I'm showing them again how to do it. So next time, you don't have to call me.
You're doing it the right way. It's just amazing to me that they're, you know, they don't want to learn. It's almost like they don't want to learn. They just want to do what they do. I'm like, how do you keep a job where you don't learn the ins and outs of that job, whatever it might be? You know?
I don't get it, but
hey, keeps you, keeps the money rolling in for you. So that's a good thing.
Yeah. That's always nice. Even though it does drive me crazy sometimes.
I know.
You just like tomorrow think, morning. Hey, it's a Monday morning.
Half hour pay.
Monday morning. I know. I know. I love that. But tomorrow morning, I'm probably going to have 10 calls before 8:15. Can't look. Cause everybody tries to get their log in 3-day weekend.
Sure.
They forgot the password over the 3 days. It's going to happen. I know it's going to happen.
Hey, do you think you could maybe drink a little less alcohol on the weekends and maybe
on a long day weekend, just write your password and put it underneath the keyboard, okay? And when you come in Monday morning, log in, throw it away.
There you go. You know?
Yeah. All right. Well, you know what? One thing I'll bring up real quick that I've been working on.
Okay.
And I designed some forms. Did I send you these forms, didn't I?
Yep. Yeah, I got them right here.
So I designed some forms that are for techs, and the purpose of these forms is to help techs be better techs. basically.
Okay.
So I'll tell you the website. The website is informedit.net. So these forms, if you go to that site, these forms are designed for techs, one, to know what to document. So let's say you're a tech and you're – and it happens to every tech. Techs been doing it for 20 years. Techs been doing it for a year. If you go on site, let's say a new client to do an interview with a client, or you're taking over work for this company,
right?
You're going to forget something.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You're not going to remember everything that you have to document. Domain name, router settings, DNS, you know, battery backups on the servers. You're not, there's no way you can remember it all, right? There's no way. So these forms are a way to help text, one, to remember and know what to document, and more importantly, to be able to document them in an easy way. So these are forms, they're PDFs, and you can fill them out right on the computer and then save them as whatever. So if you have client, you know, ABC router, you might have a folder on your server.
Okay.
Client ABC. And in there, you might have client ABC dash router PDF, client ABC domain name, you know, whatever the form is. That way you can quickly access their information. But I made these forms because I needed a way to be able to find information quickly. When is this person's domain name expiring? What is this ILO password for this server?
You know? Right.
What was their DHCP scope? I mean, all these things, yeah, you could log into the server and check it. Of course, to log into the server, you have to remember how you access that server. Do I do RDP? Do I do unintended access to instant house call or log me and rescue? How was I checking that one again? So, I mean, these forms are designed to be able to document everything about the client's network so that you, as a tech, can provide better support for them, basically.
Oh, these are great. Hey, what was the name of the website again? I'm sorry.
Informedit.net.
.net, okay. Yeah. I had most of it except the .net. All right.
I was surprised the domain name was available, actually, when I registered it.
Oh, that's good.
I actually had to get it off a Google auction. It was ending. It was expired, and it's hard to find a domain name these days.
Informedit.net. Well, you know, it'd be good if I would spell it right.
That usually helps.
Yeah, instead of putting a M, it'd be better if I used an N.
And I can say, if somebody wants to check these forms out, if you go to About the Forms, you go to the site, you go to About the Forms, and there's I put one of the forms, it says click here for the, I think I did the router form. Yeah. So you can download the router PDF and kind of see what they're about. They're all typical of that one. Everyone's got a router, so everyone can use this form. You can see what they're like, how they're fillable, what they are, basically.
Matt, these are great because, you know, these are things that, I mean, this is definitely, if you want to keep your information about a network, you know, a client's network, I mean, this has got everything you could think of.
It's everything I could think of. Now, one thing I'm probably doing is, as I get some feedback, I may add some more forms, right?
Okay.
So, Let's say you bought the forms today, and when you buy the forms, there's going to be a part in the checkout where it says, add me to the mailing list.
Okay.
If you buy the forms, you definitely want to click that mailing list, because what will happen is, if you're on the mailing list, when I add new forms, you'll be in the list to email or update forms. Maybe somebody says, hey, you should really have this laid out this way. Well, if I agree, I'll update the form, right? And if you're on the mailing list, I'll email out the new forms or the updated forms, and you'll be able to get those. So if you do buy them, click to be on the mailing list. That's what I'm using that mailing list for.
Okay, great.
New forms or updated forms. Because, you know, this is what I use to document stuff. And let's say you have other people working for you. It's easy to have all the information available for all of your people to go look up whatever you need to look up, right?
Well, yeah, and here's the thing, and I can see this. I mean, I don't support a lot of businesses or anything right now, but back in the day when I used to, these are things that you would have a normal list, which would have or try to have a lot of this information on there, but it wasn't, it didn't have it as deep as these do, you know. I mean, you've got, you know, ones for satellite offices and, you know, remote user access details.
Yeah, see, a lot of those came out because I have maybe at a company, five different people connect five different ways. So, and really what I use this for is owners or hire people.
Sure.
You know, you've heard of remote web workplace, right? Where you go to, you log into a website, you pick your computer name. Some people don't like that. Some people want an RDP connection to their computer. They don't want to be bothered going through the website.
Okay.
So if you have this, you can, and there's a lot of things involved in that. So if they don't want to go through that remote web workplace, you've got to set up a rule in the router. You've got to give a DHCP reservation for their internal computer. There's things you have to do. So this, you can easily, if they get a new computer, oh, look, let me go look at how you're accessing this, accessing your computer remotely. Right. Oh, you can easily duplicate it. You know, I've seen a lot of people get new computers, or I've had instances where somebody got a new computer, but they didn't realize they were connecting remotely a certain way. So when they go to remote access, it doesn't work. Well, right. It's a different network card, so it's now the DHCP doesn't match and the rule's not right. So if they had this, they can easily see how to duplicate it. I mean, even for home users, I mean, the home users have routers. They have wireless access points. They have even, you know, you probably won't use as much, but they do have forms even for home users. You can, if you support home users.
Yeah, I'm looking at one right now, and this is a big one. And guess what? How many times I've ran into this for home users? Internet service provider. You've got the ISP info, phone numbers, account number. Man, how many times have you had to ask for your customer's bill? Hey, let me look at your bill because I need some information so I can fix your problem. Right. The plan up and down speed so you know exactly where they should be. And if they're not there, you can adjust that. You know, the ISP supplied equipment, the IP address or the IP address range, you know, subnet, default gateway, or gateway, DNS1, DNS2. All these things are great. This would be awesome for a home user, and it's consistent.
Right. So you know where to find the information. So, I mean, that the whole thing is, and some of the forms, people have said, why is there on UPS? And if it's hardware, it's a checkbox. Is it on UPS, basically?
Okay.
And that's not that important. But you know why it's there? I had room for that. You know, so everything should be on UPS, basically, right?
Right.
Especially for businesses, your server, your router.
Absolutely.
So this is a way to remember, oh, wait, I need to check if it's on UPS. If they're not on a UPS, you know what? You need to sell them a UPS. Now you just sold them something because you found it wasn't on a UPS and it should be. Some of them have a picture on file. And that's there to remind you that a lot of times when you're doing work for somebody, it's nice to have a picture. Take a picture of the router. Yeah. Take a picture of the switch, the server. So when you're trying to do remote support, and everybody does remote support now, right?
Right.
If you're trying to walk them through something, okay, unplug your router. Which one is that? If you have a picture, you can tell them exactly what it is. It's the blue box under the red one. You know, here it is. Here's the power cord. Unplug that.
Right.
If you have a picture, it's so much easier to walk somebody through something. And I've had instances where pictures helped so many times to walk through somebody, but to know what's changed and if something's changed. If you have I've been on clients' offices where I took a picture of how the cabling was, and when they called and said that something was messed up, I went on site. It was completely messed up. I said, look, this is not the state we left it. Oh, yes, it was. I said, well, here's a picture we took. Look at it now. Who was in here? Oh, well, this person. Oh, now I'm getting the story.
Wow. Isn't that amazing? You have to back yourself up. But that, you know what, Matt, that is great advice because that's a good idea. You know, that way at least you have some backup for, you know, what you've basically done and what you've said you've done. And that way they can't try to pull one over on you.
It's worked that way. But the main reason I do it is to be able to walk somebody through something.
Yes.
So I say, okay, look at the switch. It's the second switch. You know, and so I can tell them I'm looking at it. I can easily walk through somebody, unplug this or put this here, put this there. So the pictures are very helpful. That's just there to remind you, hey, take pictures. It's easy. Everybody's got a camera on their phone now. Just snap a few pictures.
Exactly.
Put them on file. I mean, 15 years ago, it was harder, right?
Right.
But now, why not? Just snap pictures. Take a picture of the server. You can see what the lights are supposed to look like. Oh, this red light's on. You can look at your picture. Oh, that red light says this. Yes, of course, you could look it up online and find the manual. But look, just look at the picture. I mean, it's so much. These forms, I made them because they're a time saver.
Yes.
And things you might not need to change. Check domain name. How many times when you do an interview for a client, you think to ask them about their domain name? Who's it registered with? When did it expire? You know, I get lots of calls from new clients. Our domain name expired. Oh, well, you know, before we documented it, well, you manage your own domain name. Who's managing that? Well, I don't know. Well, I don't know either. I mean, there should be no reason, basically. And these forms, if you go to a new client, you bring these forms, you'll be able to do a very in-depth discovery of everything going on.
What's unique about these too, I think, is that, you know, yeah, I'm sure you could fill, you know, you could you know print these out or whatever, but to me, the way I'm looking at them is I can have these forms with me on my phone, tablet, what computer, whatever, and I basically fill them out as I'm there and then save them. You know, and you could actually save a copy to, you know, their computer or whatever you're working on. And so, you know, that they have access to that information. Or if you find a problem again and you've got to go back there, not only do you have access to it in your own file system, but you can go to their computer or if another technician comes in or whatever. I mean, there's a lot of different things you could do.
Personally,
I
wouldn't let other techs have them, but that's just me.
Well, you know what I mean. It's one of those things where I manually fill out a paper form right now when I'm doing your wireless setup, and you know I give a copy to the customer, and this is for home users. I'm thinking, and that's only so you know, hey, if something happens to me or whatever, they've got the ability have the information without you know.
I definitely give it to home users. I mean, as far as filling these out and giving to another tech, if they were nice, maybe, but.
Yeah.
When we take over a company from someone else, I do my own discovery anyway.
That's
true.
Yeah.
I'll ask them, but I don't take their word for anything.
Sure.
And if a company's like right now, we have a few companies that we do work for. They're getting bought out by bigger companies.
Okay.
I'm helping the other IT because it's not like we're getting taken over by another IT company. They're getting bought out and they have their own IT company.
Okay, I got
it. So I'm working with them. So, I mean, I would give them these forms. But
right.
Another tech, I don't want to be mean, but if another tech's company is taken over for a company we do work for, I'll basically give them the administrator password and the router password.
Gotcha.
I say, here you go. You can do everything you need right with that password. Go find it.
There you go. No, in a business setting, no, you're exactly right. I'm just thinking from a home user standpoint, if you leave a copy of it on your C drive somewhere under a support file or something, I look at it, not more for, not necessarily for other techs, but more for myself that I can get back to it if I need to. And not only that, if the customer needs it, I can say, hey, any information you need for your wireless setup and all that stuff, you can go right to this folder. It's right here. And you'll have that information right on your computer.
Now, for current, let's say I have somebody who's not documented as a current customer. I mean, I would probably fill these out on my own, not charge them. But these forms could be used if you get a new customer. It's all billable time to do discovery and this stuff. You could use these forms, fill them out, and it's all billable time, I think, for a new customer. To do discovery on a new customer, I think this is all billable time to fill these out. And right now, I think the forms are $40 normally. I have them on sale for $30 through the end of the month, I think.
Okay.
I think. But I mean, for that price, to be able to document stuff, I wanted to price them what I thought was fair.
Right. Well, you know, I'll put it to everybody this way. Either you guys can go and create these forms, spending the hundreds of hours that it's going to take to create each one of these forms yourself, or you can take somebody that's already been doing this for a long time and use what he's learned in the business and put together on the forms that works for him. And anybody that knows Matt Rainey, the one thing I love about Matt is he charges for everything.
Everything I can.
Everything is billable. And I mean that towards his customers. I But I think that's a great deal. $30 for PDF format, you know, forms that you can, they're consistent because it's not just a notepad with, you know, a bunch of line items that you're just kind of writing in and trying to remember that. I think you hit it on the head. That's the biggest thing, is trying to remember exactly what questions need to be asked every time.
Right.
You've already got it in form where you just, you basically go down, okay, IP address, what are, you know, all these different things. Hey, do we have a picture on file? Yes or no? You know, click the box. You know, what type of wireless setup does this have? You know, A, B, G, N, whatever. And you just check all those boxes. It makes it very easy, and it is a great time saver. These are great.
Yeah, these, it took me a long time to make these. Because I would make them, and then I was doing it. I'd be doing a job, and I'm being, oh, wait, I need to document that. Is it on my form? No. Okay, go edit the form. So
right.
I had these forms created and edited and changed so many times. These probably took me months to make, to be able to get them to where I thought I had everything pretty much that you could document. And I try, and they're all one page, because, you know, you don't want these forms that are real huge and in-depth.
Right.
I mean, they have the basics on them, right? And now, of course, every form has notes section.
Yep.
Because there's no way that you can document the same, because I don't know what router. Some routers might have weird settings. I mean, I base these on what most routers have, most business routers.
Okay.
Of course, they'll work for home routers, but because you won't need all the information. Like a home router's not going to have a read and a write password.
Right. Okay.
A business one will have a read password where you can get in to look at the configuration and then make changes, and then you write the config file. So, I mean, business ones have two passwords. Home ones will only have one.
Okay.
So you won't need all of them for the home, but I tried to put everything in that you could possibly need. But that's where the notes section, there's some that doesn't fit. Everyone has a notes section.
Which sure.
I like, because you might have whatever note you need to put.
Exactly. For each and everything. I like one page documents. I think that's definitely the way to go. You know, to keep a binder or, you know, a bunch of stuff, trying to, even if I'm printing these or whatever and trying to staple them together and all that kind of stuff, I just need the basic information that most of us need when we're working on stuff. Either that or we got to go, and it's from my standpoint, for a home user, we've got to go through, if they have a IP, you know, ISP problem or something like that, we generally have to go through the discovery process every time, because right. We've forgotten, we didn't put it down, they don't have it anymore, whatever. And that takes a lot of time that you don't need to spend doing that stuff. So these are
So you get a call, and this is a common call, my internet's down. Who's your mm-hmm. internet? I don't know. Mm-hmm. So if they can just call you, you pull up your form. Right. You see who to call. You see the account number. We're on it. We'll call them. We'll find out what's going on. As opposed to the other experience of trying to find out who to call, what number to call, what's the account number, who has authorized access to call them. The client is a much better experience if you've already documented this stuff.
Absolutely.
They'll have much more confidence in you as a tech if they can say, my internet's down. You say, I'm on it. I'm calling Comcast. I'll call them right now.
Yep. No, this is Comcast? Great.
Or the internet's slow. You know, I can't tell how many times, but what are you supposed to be getting? I don't know. Okay, yeah. We've got to call Comcast and find out what your plan is. How do I call Comcast? I mean, it's just, I've too many instances where just you have to do discovery to solve a problem.
Absolutely.
I say do the discovery first, then you can address problems much quicker and easier. And it makes, of course, you look better as a tech.
Exactly. No, yeah, no, absolutely. No, these are great. I think, and that's what I said. You know, you basically have, this is from real world experience. So you've got the experience that of the things that you knew you needed, and you put them into a form and updated and changed and, you know, made it so that it works for your business and what you're doing. And that's, you know, that to me is worth a lot. It really is.
Well, thanks. I hope to help people. I mean, really, because I got tired of looking for this stuff. So I said, there's got to be a better way. And I couldn't find anything already done.
Right.
So I had to find the time to do it.
Yep. No, this is great. Yeah, guys, definitely go over to www.informedit.net. And we'll have that link in the show notes. We'll make sure that information is in there. Very cool, man. Very cool. Oh, yeah. Well, anything else that obviously you've been, I know that you moved and been working on, you know, obviously you were working on these for quite a while, and we've had you on the show here, you know, a few times. Anything else going on in your business that?
Well, July is the worst month of the year. I always dread July. Always.
Why is that?
It's vacation month. Everyone goes on vacation. Okay. So I got all kind of guys out on vacation.
Gotcha.
So when I have guys on vacation, that means more work for me. So July is – I hate July.
You know, I notice from my own personal standpoint in my business, June is always one of my lowest months where I don't have a whole bunch of clientele coming in. And I don't have a bunch of retainer, you know, clients like yourself and, you know, business clients and stuff. So mine's a mostly break fix. But June, I have barely anything coming in. And then July, it'll pick back up. And then August, it's even worse and so on and so forth.
Yeah, July is just a – I love it when July's over. That's why I take a vacation usually at the end of June. I take my vacation. So I was back at work this past week. I was on vacation the week before that. I moved the week before that. So, and today, of course, I've been in the yard working. I'm sunburnt, blistered, exhausted, but nice way to prepare for tomorrow, the start of the next 3 weeks of the worst weeks of the year. But then August 1st, I get to go on a little vacation. Kind of, I'm going to that CompTIA retreat in August. So
very cool.
That'll be a nice little get away from work and go check out a few things over there. So
I am going to find, I don't think I'm going to be able to do it this year, but I'm definitely going to find a way to get involved and stuff like that. Cause it sounds like a lot of fun.
I've never been to a conference. Never. I've always wanted to go to one. I figure that's a good one. We'll go. So we'll see.
There you go. Yeah. Sounds good. All right. Well, I think we've had a bunch of great stories and definitely a good product with this, you know, with these forms, fillable forms in a PDF format. And I encourage everybody just to check these things out. And
check out the free one. I mean, there's one for free.
There you go.
You can check them out, see what they look like. If you don't like them, if not, you get the worst. You get a free router for them. So
there you go. And you can't beat the price either. That's a great price for something like this that, you know, a lot of time and effort went into, you know, putting this stuff together so that you don't have to, you can spend time doing what you guys do, making money, you know, fixing computers, not having to worry about creating the wheel again. So that's great. All right. Well, if anybody wanted to get in touch with you, Matt, what would be the best way to do that? I know you're a busy guy.
They can still chime. Give me a call or email. Email address would be info@informedit.net. Twitter, Pilots Pro on Twitter.
Okay.
Is the two best ways.
Gotcha. Okay. Sounds good. And if you guys want to find me, you can find me over on Google+ at Jeffrey Hallish or Twitter at TechNutPC. And if you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, email us at podnutsdaily@podnuts.com. You guys can help support the Podnuts Network. The next time you're shopping on Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. Remember, that doesn't change your price at all. It just puts a little change in the pocket of the Podnuts Network to bring you these guys, to bring you these great shows. And also, if you guys could help us out, if you could go over to iTunes and, you know, just give us a quick review on Podnuts Daily and what you like about it, that would be great and very helpful in making us a little more discoverable. I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily. Come check out some of the other podcasts on the Podnuts Network, like Android App Addicts. It's now a daily podcast. 5 days a week, each show the perfect length to get you through your daily commute or workout. If you have an Android device and aren't listening to this show, you are missing out. Or if you're interested in remote support, check out the Remote Support Show. If you want to laugh and have a good time hearing about tech, listen to The Geeksters. If you want to learn about Linux, then check out Linux for the Rest of Us. And if you're into all things server-related at work or for fun, check out The Server Show. In the market for a new phone, check out Mobile Dynasty to get all the latest information on your mobile technology. If you're tired of being unhealthy, then check out Health Nuts. Come check out these shows and more over at podnuts.com.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.